Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. After the worst race of the season, we had one of the best races in the hybrid era. From negativity to awesomeness, today we discuss the Austrian GP. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fogo. Hello everyone to episode 148 of the Fastest Lap podcast. In the last quarter of the Austrian GP, I was bursting with excitement, not knowing who would win and actually unsure who I would actually like to win more. And I don't know when I had that feeling the last time watching Formula One. It was just awesome. Was it the same for you, Fergal?
Yeah, it was really cool. A really good race all around. And like you said, going from one of the worst races to one of the best. I think the title of our last episode and the discussion of the last episode was, you know, all about the negativity and everything in Formula One. And this weekend, last weekend for the Austrian GP, we certainly didn't have any of that. It was great. All the whole race, the whole weekend, it was just fantastic. Especially those last laps when, you kind of realised that Verstappen was going to catch Leclerc and that they were going to go head to head for the lead and ultimately the win. So, it was really, really exciting.
And what a drive it was from Verstappen. After, he messed up the start a little bit when the car went into anti-stall. You would guess it was a driver error. But after being, I think he was P8 or something, in lap one, making the moves stick, overtaking Lando Norris, overtaking Kimi Raikkonen, of course. And then after his pit stop, basically going on and passing the big guys, Vettel and Bottas, and it was so amazing to see how skilled he is pulling off those overtakes. And we've seen it with other drivers being a bit more cautious and maybe trying to overtake a little bit, but then staying behind because, thinking that the gap isn't opening and stuff. But his moves were so decisive and his pace actually was really, really good. Although I have to wonder, to be honest, whether Honda, I don't know, maybe they put the engine into quali mode for the last 20% of the race or something, not caring about the championship, because let's be honest, if they need a new engine next race, who cares? They just wanted to win that race, and I would assume they just didn't care about reliability and put the engine up to 11, and actually they did put it to 11, right?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to say, massive congratulations to Honda, we were all there, we watched them through their struggle with McLaren, and it was extremely dark times. I mean, it was really dark times for McLaren, but of course for Honda as well. And earlier this year they got their first podium, and now their first race win in the hybrid era. It's that was really, really special.
And it was really emotional as well for the Honda guys.
Of course, I mean, they've been working extremely hard over the last I guess since their project was announced back, when was it, 20... I don't even know when it was, 2012 around-ish that time, I don't know, 2013, I can't remember, but it's been a long time coming for Honda, and really well done to them. And then for Verstappen, I think that race pretty much for me, and maybe it's a bit of a big statement, but for me, I think Verstappen right now is probably the most complete driver on the grid.
And how old is he? 21?
21. And that's including Lewis Hamilton. Which is why I'm saying it's probably a big statement. But look, like this weekend for Verstappen wasn't a one-off. He's been putting in top performances and getting everything out of the car every weekend at every race so far this year. I think his lowest finish was P5 in Canada, and obviously he was compromised when his qualifying didn't go to plan, when he was knocked out in Q2 because of the crash of Magnussen. But every other race other than Canada, he's been either P4, P3, or P1. Yeah, it's been an incredible run for Verstappen this year, and such a contrast to how he was over the last couple of years. I mean, he showed speed at times, but you know, he made some mistakes, and there's been nothing like that this year, and he's just been flawless the whole year. And you have to say that he 100% deserved a race victory for the way that he's performed over the last 8 or 9 races. And of course it had to come at Austria, at Red Bull's home race, 12 months on from when it did it last year as well. So, but I think this win was so much more better than the one in 2018. So
and also the Dutch home race with
basically
every single person from the Netherlands visiting the Grand Prix.
I've since I've been watching Formula One, or since I've been watching it with, like, you know, added interest, or you know, when I'm fully aware of what's going on, I think Verstappen's fan base is, you know, the biggest I've ever seen.
Have you seen on Twitter? I think Guido van der Gaart.
Yeah, there was a big Ziggo Dome. Yeah,
I seen like a whole arena with people just watching Formula One. I mean, how cool is that?
I think it was something like 10,000 people or something.
Amazing.
So it's pretty much unmatched, I think, Verstappen, because even
it's like in the Schumacher days, right?
Yeah.
I would guess. I didn't really live it through in Germany, but from what I've heard, it must have been really big with Schumacher.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I say. When Schumacher retired the first time, I was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. So, like I said, I wouldn't have really noticed too much those sort of things. So, Verstappen's fan base now is like, it's unreal, and it's great to see. And you just think that the Dutch Grand Prix next year is going to be crazy, and he's going to be one busy guy that weekend. It won't depend on what team, but I wouldn't be surprised maybe if there's a different team that he's with. Maybe we can get onto that a bit after, but just unbelievable weekend all round from Verstappen. I mean, not only the race, but qualifying too. Did well, and then obviously got promoted to the front row when Hamilton got his penalties. So just a fantastic weekend all round from him.
Yeah, and the move that actually made him win the race, well, let's start it this way. In Canada, we had to discuss penalties after the race. In France, we had to discuss penalties after the race. And the same thing, sadly, happened again here in Austria. I mean, the move was pretty hard, to be honest. We've all seen it. There was contact between Leclerc and Verstappen. And to be honest, again, I thought, like, in the first, when I first, or when the, when I saw the move live, I was like, ooh, he didn't leave any room there. But watching it in from different angles, I changed my mind a little bit. And I mean, he was on the outside. It was Verstappen's corner. And usually when there is no runoff, you don't even try to go there. So all in all, I mean, apart from that, it would have been a disaster for Formula One if, really a disaster in my opinion, if they had decided another race win or something with another penalty. So I was really glad they didn't give a penalty out. What about you?
Yeah, I was really glad. I mean, why does everything have to be overanalyzed like this? Why can we not just let them race? Let them go for it. I mean, these are the top racing drivers in the top racing category. If Leclerc got damage or something like that, okay, you know, maybe look into it, but they didn't. You know, it was just hard tough racing, but that's what Formula One should be all about. The best guys going at it hard like that because they're fighting for the ultimate prize in motorsport. And yeah, I think it was a bit of a shame that there was contact. It's always nicer to see moves being pulled off cleanly and everything. I'm not, you know, disagreeing with that, but yeah, it was fine. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it, in my opinion. And people were talking about the Canada incident and stuff like that, but I think the Canada incident, when you put the Canada incident alongside the Verstappen one, I mean, I think the one in Canada was way, I mean, I argued that the Canada penalty for Vettel shouldn't have been a penalty, but even that was way more of a penalty than what the Verstappen overtake, you know, the consequences, let's say. So yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that it wasn't a penalty, and I'm glad that they didn't. But it was, yeah, I don't know, it was just a, I mean, when do we get intense battles like that for the lead in Formula One? It's very rare that it happens, and when it happens, just let it happen. If someone picks up damage, you know, look into it and maybe hand out a punishment if it needs be. But when they both get away with it, if someone runs another one off the track, just let them get on with it. It's racing, and doing over analyzing and penalizing things like that is what will kill the sport. Because
just on that, the perfect stat that underlines that, the hearing of Verstappen and Leclerc and the analysis of the incident actually took longer than the race itself. Yeah. And then you know something is not right.
Yeah, it took quite a while. I think Michael Massey explained why it took so long, but nevertheless, it's still, I must admit, I was a bit nervous waiting for the result because I was kind of ashamed because I wanted to get onto the FIA website and look at their documents and refresh their documents, but the website was down because there was too many people on it waiting for it. So that wasn't an option for me. And then there was a fake document going around saying that he got a penalty, and then there was a picture of them, of Verstappen and Leclerc, coming out of the room and of the stewards. Where the stewards meeting was, and people were saying by the look on their faces that Verstappen must have a penalty. People were just completely just analyzing everything they could. But
maybe it's a tactic of Formula One just to extend the excitement outside of the races, just to keep people interested.
Yeah, I mean, it's one way of doing it, but on the other hand, it's like it leaves this overhanging for the drivers. Let's say it just comes back to let them race. That's my point. Just let them race.
We don't want a race to be decided on the green table.
No, and I've said it multiple times. If a driver picks up damage, and someone loses an advantage or because of a reckless move or something, it's worth looking into. But there was nothing reckless about Verstappen's overtake. He went for it, I think, the lap before, left him room. Second time around, he knew that Leclerc could get good drive off the corner, so he knew he had to go for it in a much, much harder way the second time around. And maybe Leclerc should have defended the corner more. We've seen that the Ferraris were taking the outside line the whole way through the weekend. They were not really touching that apex at turn three at all for much of the weekend to get a better acceleration down the straight. But yeah, maybe he should have, when that stuff's on the line, he should have known that Verstappen, of all people, was not going to play ball there. But all in all, I mean, regardless of what the outcome was or anything like that, it was a fantastic battle between two 21-year-olds driving for Red Bull and for Ferrari for the lead of a Grand Prix. I turn 21 in a couple of months, and it's just surreal to think that guys that age are doing this. But I mean, judging by their skill, it's definitely deserved, and they deserve to be there. But yeah, I'll admit that I do feel a bit sorry for Leclerc, because he too, let's not forget, we talk about Verstappen and how well he drove, but Leclerc was also flawless the whole weekend. I mean, qualifying, yeah, he was untouchable. The race, he was great, but Verstappen was just quicker, unfortunately, in the race. But yeah, to have another win like that slip away in the last moments of the race when it was looking strong must be tough.
But I have to say, I was surprised again how calm Leclerc stayed after that. So already appreciated that after Bahrain, and also here after the Austrian GP. He was, of course, on the inside, I'm sure it was a completely different situation, but how he spoke to the media, how he kind of reacted, I thought, well, that's a pretty mature driver for a 21-year-old. So, yeah, that was good to see. And as I said in the introduction, I would have enjoyed seeing both drivers win, because I think both deserved it. But coming back to the move itself, I think even with that move, there was a lot of skill required for Verstappen to actually hit him tire on tire. And we know that's a trademark of Verstappen, that he can position his car just as he needs it. And we've seen it in, I think it was 3 years ago, when Rosberg tried something similar, maybe. And yeah, he lost his front wing. And I think even in another year someone tried something and it didn't work out, but I can't quite remember. So yeah, even with that move, there was a lot of skill required.
I just want to say as well, I don't know if you watched any of the junior races.
I watched the feature race of F2, but nothing else.
In Formula 3, in the sprint race, there was contact between two teammates for the lead, Robert Schwartzman and Marcus Armstrong, for the lead of the Formula 3 race. On the very last lap, they made contact, fighting into turn 3. So it's a kind of a notorious corner now for contact, especially when it's for the lead, it seems.
Earlier you mentioned, who knows whether Verstappen will drive for Red Bull next year. Well, there is talk that he might have a clause in his contract to leave Red Bull, and then of course there's talk about one seat available at Mercedes when Bottas doesn't get a new contract. We'll talk about Mercedes maybe in a minute, but yeah, there was some talk there could be a clause. I don't know what clause there could be in. Of course, he wouldn't want to comment on that in the media. But maybe it was something like they need to get a podium up until the summer break. And well, he achieved that now. Maybe the clause now doesn't come into effect.
Yeah, just when you said that, you know, not talking to the media, I don't know if you saw in the press conference, one of the Dutch journalists asked him about the clause. I mean, he just straight up went in there and asked him, Max, we've heard that there's a clause in your contract, can you tell us what it is?
Yeah.
And Max said, what do you think, my friend? Of course not. So, it's not gonna...
Yeah, of course, I'll email it to you later.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit I'm not entirely... I know of another clause. I'm not sure what exactly the whole contract situation is, but I think Red Bull... I don't know. See, the situation is weird because the Red Bull in Austria, it looked so much like the Red Bull of almost the second half of 2018, where in qualifying... it wasn't really there, but in the race it had pretty much, yeah, arguably the best race car out of any of the three teams. I mean, we know that Mercedes had major cooling issues,
and still my theory is that Honda had the engine turned up much more compared to everyone else.
We don't really know, but I don't know if you see, there are whispers, and I would be surprised to see Verstappen leave Red Bull after this year, but I do think it's a possibility, and there are some rumors gathering that he could be on his way to Ferrari, while Sebastian Vettel could be on his way back to Red Bull. And you know, as far
but, but honestly, I don't think Red Bull is that stupid. They wouldn't put a clause in where they know that it is too ambitious. And in my opinion, they are currently in a situation where you would have expected them to be, maybe better than the critics might have thought with the new Honda engine. But I mean, having a podium, being third in the constructors, Verstappen even being ahead of both Ferraris now in the championship, which is amazing. But I don't think there's any clause, logically thinking, they could have put in there that's now triggered.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you never know. Contracts are very, very complex. And I mean, every single word in a contract is placed there. You know, specifically, it's you know, every single word in the contract is fleshed out and thought out. So I don't think it's fair for me to comment on Red Bull and their contract situations when I don't know exactly what the situation is. But yeah, I think you say that they're not stupid enough for that, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not calling them stupid, but I while I could see it happening, I would still be surprised if it happened. But I mean, regardless of that, just in a theoretical sense, can you just imagine Verstappen versus Leclerc at Ferrari?
Not really.
No. I mean, theoretically, just imagine it. I mean, how amazing would it be to have them fighting against each other? It would be great. And even if you went to Mercedes, Hamilton versus Verstappen at two would be amazing. But it's still early for all this, but I did hear that there are kind of some the situation just isn't clear at the moment. And some talks were reported in Austria, so I don't know. It's still early days, but we'll see where Red Bull goes from here. Whether this race was simply kind of just a one-off or an anomaly, or if they can keep up this strong form, we'll see. But I think consistently Red Bull are behind, the likes of Mercedes or Ferrari, regardless of Verstappen's position right now in the championship. He's just been performing better than what the car can realistically perform, I think. So we'll see. But
does Gasly show that question mark?
I think we'll probably talk a bit about Gasly as well in a little bit. But It's an interesting situation with Verstappen, because it would be great to see him go to a different team, but he is such a strong position right now in the Red Bull team. I mean, he's the team leader. He's in a great position. So we'll see what happens.
In a works team with Honda now.
Yeah. So, but the only other options for him pretty much are Mercedes and Ferrari. He wouldn't go anywhere else. But let's not forget, we no one really imagined last year that Daniel Ricciardo was going to go to Renault. So it just, you never know. And while it is unlikely, you just never know. And we'll see what the next few races conjure up.
If I were Verstappen, I would only consider Mercedes, to be honest, because Ferrari, in my opinion, I think it would be a bit too much of a risk. Leclerc is their boy, basically, coming through the academy. Ferrari, not since 2012 or something, they didn't really have a car fighting for the championship, and why would it change for 2020 or 2021? In my opinion, it would be a bigger risk than Mercedes. And why would you take risks if you are in a good position, as you said, with Red Bull? And who knows what they are planning for 2020 or 2021? I guess this year they're definitely using kind of a as kind of a gap year to develop car and engine and everything, because there is no way they can challenge for P1 at least in the championship. P2, who knows, but of course their P3 is basically theirs. I don't think Renault or anyone else could get close to them. So I don't know.
Sorry, I just want to say, would you say it's a risk to move to Ferrari? I think it's, sure, it would be a risk for him to go to Ferrari and maybe for Ferrari to bring him in as well. But I think there's just as much risk staying at Red Bull. And you know, if the opportunity genuinely presented itself to Verstappen to move to Ferrari, I mean, that kind of offer is extremely difficult to turn down, I would imagine. To have a contract with Ferrari placed in front of you would be very, very difficult to turn down.
But I mean, all of that would only happen if Vettel actually retired, and to be honest, I don't think that.
Or if he decides he wants to come back to Red Bull.
Ah, God. I don't think that either.
Honestly, I don't know. Of course, it's a hard thing to imagine, but I mean, why not? I mean, if you can tell me, it could happen. Is all I'm gonna say. It could happen. I don't see why it genuinely couldn't. I mean, someone that's enjoyed so much success at that team, and it quite hasn't worked out at Ferrari. But yeah, I've said before though, it's all still really early, and I'm sure the next kind of where are we? July. Yeah, the next month or two probably we'll have more of a indication of what's going to happen. I mean, the most likely scenario is that everyone will stay where they are for next year, but there is always a chance that it could get switched up, so we'll see.
Yeah, and there's still so many topics to talk about, but we're already near the half an hour mark for the episode, so let's quickly and briefly discuss Gasly again. I mean, I think even in the last two episodes, in the last two races, we discussed his position. But honestly, I feel like this race actually decided his future. Honestly, you can't be on basically on the same part of the track after the start with your teammate and then get lapped by him. I mean, this is basically, you have to say it's unacceptable. And it's a performance where you really need to question now, with Red Bull having a car that on some occasions can fight for the podium, actually can split Ferraris. How much is it costing them in terms of reputation? Of course, as I said earlier, in terms of the World Constructors Championship, there probably isn't much of an impact, but it's hurting Red Bull as a brand. It's hurting Pierre Gasly's reputation massively currently. And would Red Bull want to give another driver the chance? That's basically the question that surrounds that. But what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, you said that you think this race has decided his faith. I think I agree with you. Well, from what I understand, the situation now is Red Bull will completely strip his RB15 and conclude once and for all if there is a fundamental issue that doesn't affect Verstappen's car. That's kind of been hampering him over the last, well, since the beginning of the season, really. If that's the case and they actually do discover something, it will be worked on and it will be, you know, they'll try to solve it. But if it's discovered that that's not the case and that the car is fine, then it pretty much could mean the end for Gasly at Red Bull. And I think the decision could be taking some time. It could be taken sometime around the summer break, maybe before the Belgian Grand Prix, and it would be Daniel Kvyat that's going back into the car, back to Red Bull. So
The thing I would do, I mean, we all know that Red Bull has a pretty good simulator, and I would assume that if Gasly is behind or is slower than Verstappen on track, that he's slower in the simulator. Why don't they just put the other two drivers in and see whether they perform better in the Red Bull? I think that's a pretty good solution.
I don't know. I mean, it's a very, very different situation from a simulator to the track.
Yeah, the question is how well that correlates, of course.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much different things to that come into question with a Grand Prix weekend. It's tough. It's very, very tough. It's dark times for Gasly right now, and I'm feeling a bit sorry for him. I mean, his situation is interesting, because I remember watching him in GP2, as it was known then. I remember, yeah, he was talked about for a Toro Rosso seat from the beginning of the 2017 season, but Helmut Marko decided that he wasn't ready for the seat, and I tended to agree after his GP2 season in 2016, despite the fact that he won the championship in 2016. His teammate, of course, was Antonio Giovinazzi, and the two of them went head-to-head for the GP2 title in 2016 as teammates. And Giovinazzi was in his rookie year and, you know, just missed out on the title. He went off to compete in Super Formula, and his Super Formula campaign was quite successful. He came second in the championship and couldn't take part in the finale because it was cancelled due to a storm. I think he lost by like half a point or something like that. I guess his climb from Toro Rosso to Red Bull was very, very quick. Whether he was ready for that or not, you know, I'm not quite sure. And his full season with Toro Rosso in 2018, a lot of people question how good of a benchmark Brendan Hartley was beside him, because Hartley, that year I think was his first year racing in single seaters since like 2012 or something like that. That was kind of questioned from the get-go, and I think if it's, yeah, I mean, there's no way, if Gasly keeps performing like this, there's 100% no way that Red Bull will keep him. Whether that be they'll keep him until the end of the season or replace him midway through the season, we'll see. But if it keeps going like this, he'll 100% be out of the car. You said it yourself, it's just not acceptable to be lapped by your teammate. It's just, yeah, it's not great for Gasly at all. I can't help feel a bit sorry for him, but just nowhere to hide in Formula One, especially when you're driving for a top team like that.
Yeah, and definitely someone who did not need to hide was Max Verstappen, and coming to our driver of the weekend, for me, there's not much of a discussion. Max Verstappen, driver of the weekend, great qualifying, great race. Yeah, not much to discuss, right?
Yeah, I was kind of going to go, was going to let you, hoping for you to go first and then decide on the other one. So for example, if you went with Verstappen, I'd go with Leclerc, but that was my original plan. But just the more I kind of think about it, there's no way I can't go for Verstappen, even though Leclerc did an amazing job in our driver ratings for GPtoday.net. We gave both Verstappen and Leclerc a 10 out of 10 for their performances. There was some other great performances too, like the two McLarens, Norris and yep. And Sainz, who came from the back of the field, who could have ended up in front of Gasly, McLaren think, if not for some front wing damage towards the end. Congratulations to Antonio Giovinazzi, who got his first mm-hmm. his first point. So I think that means everyone now except Williams in the Drivers' Championship has points. It was maybe just mention Lewis Hamilton as well. It was kind of a Yeah, I mean, I guess it wasn't really much his fault, the race, the lack of pace from Mercedes, but every race this year he's finished either... well, he's finished second twice, and he's finished first every other race. And then in Austria, he finished fifth. So, yeah, not the greatest weekend. Still has a big lead in the championship, of course, but... not the perfect weekend from him, but yeah, I'm gonna go for Max Verstappen as well. Just thinking about his weekend, and particularly his race, it was just outstanding. Maybe not exactly on par with Brazil 2016, but it's fairly up there. Probably his best win after I think his first in 2016 in Spain.
Yeah, talking of outstanding, good transition to the race rating as well. Of course, we rate every race out of 10, and you can check our ratings on fastestlappodcast.com/stats. It was a pretty good race. I really enjoyed it, and looking back at my ratings, I rated Bahrain 8.5. And yeah, maybe... after I went first for my trial of the weekend, you can go first for the race rating, because I'm a little bit undecided on how I should rate the race. But I'm interested to find out what your rating will be.
I think I gave Bahrain a 9, which is I think the highest I think I've ever given a race.
Yeah,
and
I think so. Yeah. And even 8.5 for me was one of the highest. I think maybe Silverstone last year I rated pretty highly, but other than that, yeah.
Yeah, I think 9 was the highest that I gave for Bahrain, and I'm going to match it again. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. It was just a great race all around. With the start, Verstappen coming through, some good midfield battles between Norris and Raikkonen and Gasly, and... yeah, signs coming through the field. Not really too much differing strategies, but I think it properly warrants a 9 out of 10, especially for that late race battle and the progress of Max Verstappen after his poor start. I thoroughly enjoyed it, so 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, and I am undecided whether I rated as the best race ever in terms of our ratings, meaning a 9 or an 8.5 being the same as the Bahrain GP. And well, to be honest, there were some great factors in that race, as you said, not knowing who would win until the very end. We had some interesting strategies as well, the Ferrari starting on the soft tires and pitting for the hards, Mercedes starting on the mediums and Verstappen. There were some good battles in the midfield as well. And to be honest, I can't really explain it fully, but I enjoyed it more than the Bahrain GP. I don't know why. Maybe because it wasn't one of the two big teams that won the race, maybe because of that. So I match your rating, and I would also rate it as a 9 out of 10. A really, really good race.
And what's even more amazing is we rate this race so highly, and all 20 drivers finished. There was no crashes, there was no yellow flags, no safety
no
cars,
rain.
No rain, no red flags, nothing of that sort. It was
pure racing.
It was a fantastic race, and I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Yep. And on that note, let's end the episode. I mean, that was a great way to end it. Great racing, a very great weekend, and yeah, we hope you'll be back with us next week. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.